Good morning, family. My name is Larry, and I'm Adam.
Hey, Larry.
And I'm grateful for being here, and just found out that they needed some help with this workshop, so I'm going to do the best I can, you know. First of all, I always like to give honor to my higher power and thank my higher power for another day clean. A little bit about myself. I've been in the program, God's Will, May 23rd, for 10 years. And one of the things that has helped me along this way is trying to get a better understanding of the traditions as well as the steps as it relates to how I go about trying to be a power example for others. I got through this process mainly from watching other people in the program, because I could read the literature and I could understand it, but where I had difficulty is how I go out into life and deal with the cravings and the compulsion and obsession and how to stay clean. So some of the things that were told to me early on still hold dear to me is staying in service. I'm in service even at this convention. I sit on the board of directors. I'm vice treasury. I'd be involved with trying to maintain the integrity of what this money goes for, which is to help the addict who still suffers. The indigent packages and things of that nature, people who are not as fortunate as some of the others who come into the program still holding on to their jobs. And this was a way of me showing some gratitude and giving back what was so freely given to me, which is the opportunity to live. And now it's time for me to show gratitude for my higher power, giving me the strength to be able to come into the rooms and admit I'm an addict. Because for so long I was in a state of denial. And I remember early on when I finally decided that I wanted some help, was after my wife told me that, I don't know why you're putting yourself down on the bed. I'd been out on a bench for two or three nights, and I decided that, you know, I had enough, and I prayed out and asked God for some help. And I had a son-in-law who died as a direct result of this disease, who had gone through a treatment program. And the concern I had was that, I didn't want to go away. I wanted to do it in the area that I live in. And lo and behold, when I called my insurance company and they directed me to the area hospital, they had a program for 2 weeks. But the problem was that the two-week program was more expensive. And they had a 28-day program, which was out of state. And immediately what shot to my mind, I prayed and asked God for this help, was how am I going to tell my job that I need to be off for 30 days? I'm like, damn, they're not going to have no understanding about this. And I remember at the time that I didn't want to have to tell them the true nature of why I wanted to leave, because I always felt like I would be blackballed, that I would never have an opportunity to advance. So this anonymity piece was, how do I focus on what I felt in my heart, God answering my prayers and me being sick and tired of using. And, you know, the funny thing is that sometimes I don't always know how my help is going to come. It's like, you know, part of me wanted to come up with a way to try to figure out how to, you know, do it differently. And for so long, that's why I stayed in this triangle of obsession for so long, is that I kept trying to mix NA way up with Larry's way and couldn't figure out why I struggled for so long. So I just wrote them a letter saying, look, I need to be off for 30 days. I had to leave. Been very fortunate to be able to, at that time, accumulate some leave, because there were times where I couldn't make an 80-hour pay period, you know. But I had to leave. So the first, you know, in where I work at in the government, they have different levels of management. So the first manager that had to approve my leave, he said, well, we need more explanation. I said, people go off and take 30 days just to go on a vacation. I wasn't asking them to advance me in the leave. And still at that time, I wasn't willing to tell them the exact nature of why I wanted to take off. But I knew that I was really, really hurting emotionally and definitely spiritually bankrupt. And so they kept pressing me, and so I said, look, this is the only way that I'm going to share exact nature of why I need to be off, and that is I have to talk to the head man. Who's making the final decision? I'm not going to tell everybody up the line. And I knew that at that time the person making the final decision was a friend of mine through, you know, the nature of the work and the years of service that I had at that particular time. But even at then, I didn't want to tell them, but I had to try to buy me some time to get up the courage to go forth. If it came down to it, I had to let them know that I'm an addict and I have a problem and I need to go into an inpatient program so I can get the help that I need. That's how sick and tired I was in the end. If I had to break my anonymity, I would do so. And as a result, they granted me the leave and I went to Tampa, Florida. I spent 33 days down there and got the help that I need without having to break my anonymity. But for a long time, you know, I always thought that people didn't know that I was an addict, you know. So my behavior really was where people could see what was really going on. I just didn't want to say it out my mouth. I ain't had the courage to admit that I was an addict. But when you're working and making a nice salary and, you know, you got to walk 21 blocks to get to work. I used to live at 33rd and K Street in Washington, and I would walk to 21st and K every morning because I had too much pride to stand at the bus stop and ask people for a bus receipt. So, you know, I'm wearing this nice little polyester suit and tie, so I would get up and walk because I'd be unused, you know, day after my payday, I'd be broke. And I would do that over and over again through the insanity of my disease. So then I would get to work. I wouldn't have no money, so I ain't had no lunch. So I had to stay away from the guys and just say, man, come on, let's go to lunch. I said, well, no, I got something to do. Then when people would leave out their offices and people had the candy dishes, I would go in there and rob the candy dishes. And this is how I would survive during the day for lunch. You know, and people would say things like they kind of knew what was going on, and they did. You know, it's just that I was still in so much denial that for whatever reason, I felt my disease was different, you know, because I was still able to maintain my job. I was still able to pay my rent, but it may be 2 months late, you know. But, you know, I just kept trying to identify out as to why I was different. At that time, I was calling myself a functioning addict. You know, making up the most outrageous nonsense to justify the means and ends of which I was doing. So now, you know, after going through this and being sick and tired of being sick and tired, even before I got to, you know, the job situation of trying to maintain my anonymity, I was lying to my family. And over time, you know, people identify with us through our behavior, through the behavior of the disease, through the character defects, through the not showing up. Through saying, I'm going to the store to get the mustard for what you're cooking for dinner. I'll be right back. And not showing back up, you know. So even when I got back, I wanted to know why my wife had a problem. It won't happen no more, you know. And over time, you know, I learned that the only one I was hurting was myself. And so if it meant that, you know, me taking a drink or drug, then I would have to break my anonymity. I have to make that choice, you know. But fortunately, I've been able to just let people know that, you know, I don't drink anymore, I don't drug anymore, so I don't go around people to do those things. And when I've been placed in those environments, I don't feel nothing when I say, nah, I don't want nothing to drink. And to the extent that I've grown to trust people, and, you know, sometimes I have to let them know where I'm at because, you know, you can't separate yourself from your family, cookouts, you know, on jobs. I go to a lot of conferences, and the people trying to gain the business of the government where I work at, they want to treat you by giving you all the free drinks you can drink, you know, because they're trying to get the government's contracts. But I'm comfortable with where I am in my recovery, and I'm not willing to compromise that for the sake of someone finding out. If it have to come to that. And that's an individual choice that I make, you know. I don't get out and promote NA as an event. I don't get out and say, well, we're having this big convention and certain entertainment is going to be there to non-recovering addicts. I try to stay within within the NA family, and as I go to meetings, make announcements and things of that nature. I love this program so much that sometimes I find myself at a meeting and by me thinking so much on my recovery, you know, sometimes you got to get acknowledged. I'm about to say, my name is Larry and I'm an addict. So if I'm not staying focused, you know what I mean? That's just how much I love the program. But I always got to remember where I'm at because we got these different faces we got to put on, these different personalities that suit the occasion. So I'm like, man, I got to be real careful. But, you know, so one of the things that I learned in this process, and I really learned this from a lot of people in my area, is a lot of ways in how I respond to things and how things are different now than they used to be is based on where I'm at spiritually. One of my friends shared that a lot of times it's not like, you know, we always get things right as far as making the right decision or the right choice. But, you know, the reality of it is a lot has to do with where we are spiritually. And hopefully that, you know, we won't use behind making bad choices, but God will give us another opportunity to get it right the next time around. So I do a lot of prayer and meditation, because I know that I have a disease that's only been arrested, and I don't try to minimize it. I don't try to make it more than what it is, but I realize there's no known cure for this, and this is why, you know, what has worked for me is just staying involved with the process and staying in the middle by being in service, by networking. I try to watch my meetings because sometimes I don't think I get enough and I can get lax. I meet on a regular basis with people in my network. I meet with my sponsor every Friday. We go out and eat. I didn't come in here with the little weight that I have, but I've been able to, you know, just try to stay focused in this recovery process because I've been a part of situations where people with time, and I love my time. I wouldn't want to start all over again. But the reality of it is, you know, when you go into meetings and you hear how people have gone back out as a result of not continuing to be vigilant in the process of recovery the way they were when they first got here. I have heard, and this really means a lot to me, to be as relentless in my pursuit of using as I was, be as relentless in my pursuit of recovery as I was in my using. And what that meant for me is I thought about when I first took that first hit, the energy that I put in to use it and the means and ways to get more. I would call my family members because I had a big enabling system. So I would just wear people out. So now it's about trying to, you know, after all this time, to keep that same zeal I had in the beginning. Because for me, I read the chapter on Moral Be Revealed that talked about the complacency. I don't want to become complacent. I'm enjoying the life that I have, but I'm no fool. I only have this life as a direct result of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and I, you know, I could talk about the things that I've been able to gain, the assets that I've been able to gain as a direct result of coming into this program. But one of the things I try to focus on more so than anything are the materialistic aspects, because some people might not never get there. I try to focus on the intangible things. I have a little bit more serenity in my life that I'm able to hold on to by working the steps and working the program to the best of my ability. And like I say, if it came down to me having to take a drink and someone says, well, you know, you either take this drink or, you know, breaking my anonymity, then I got to do what I got to do for me. You know, I'm all right with my kids knowing I'm an addict, even though I would prefer they not to. I'm all right with my grandkids knowing I'm an addict, even though I would prefer they not have to find out. I brought them to meetings, but this is my comfort level. The most important thing for me is to try to show them we make mistakes and, you know, allow God, my understanding, to use me in such a way that hopefully they don't have to make the mistake that I've made, that I've already shown them the way that I was doing things and my coping skill of dealing with things was totally wrong. And, you know, the honesty part and the not being ashamed part is to admit the fact that I'm an addict. And, you know, and in this process, hopefully, you know, I can cut that cord off, if not within the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, within my own family, to show them that using is not the way. That's not the way to deal with problems. That's not the way to deal with things that come up. And also to be able to give them some of this information that I've been able to gain through this 12-step process. I believe that one of the greatest assets that the the steps and have given me is a knowledge of a God of my understanding that works for me. In the beginning, I had the knowledge of the God of my grandmother, which worked when I wanted to work. I could use it when I wanted it. You know, when things get bad, you say, oh, God, I'm not going to do this anymore. Or when you're coming down off a bench or after using and all the money is gone and you got to go home and try to figure out what lie you're going to tell for being out all night and all this type of stuff. I don't have to use God in that way. I pray even when things are going good. And that's how I believe that I stay spiritually grounded and spiritually focused. I believe that every day starts a new episode in this process of recovery. And I don't know what to expect. So I believe the first thing for me is to thank God for another day clean. And ask no matter what goes on this particular day, that His will be done and not mine. That gives me some hope that no matter what comes down the pipe, I might be able to make a better choice on how to deal with it. I was a very impulsive person in my drug using, so I made decisions, didn't even consider the consequences. And when I found myself in those consequences that were very unfavorable, I'm trying to figure out how in the hell I got there. You know, and then when I sit down and get in touch with self just enough, then I look at how I created my own havoc, my own confusion. And I don't want to live like that no more. Only through God's grace that I stand here clean. And so I just believe that the people that have been so instrumental in helping me early on, and that's why I like giving back to that newcomer, because I believe that is the most important person in the world. You be wanting people to get it. You be wanting family members who are still struggling to get it, because it's not easy, you know, because it took me 9 years of surrender. So I was a very obstinate person. It wasn't like this is my first time around, and I got in touch with NA in 1989. I didn't surrender to 1998. So I don't want to make it seem like I just got in and stayed stuck. I honor the people that did, but for me, I always had this way of trying to justify that somehow I was different from all the other addicts, especially those that I was using with, because they treated me like I was the man. I had more money, they weren't working, you know, and they would just roll out the red carpet and leave the big chair open for me. But when all the money ran out, I seen everything get normal. You know, they were going off to their little spies. I'm saying, come on, man, I know you done stole something from me. But the reality of it is I lived in a dream world for so long that, you know, I really thought that this was the way to live. You know, I kind of liked it. But now it's about trying to look at the reality, you know, that God didn't get me clean just for myself. And when I show up for my commitments and my service work, it's not to be a part of a popularity. It's, oh, Larry's always in service. It's to save my life. This is how I stay planted in this program. I need to surround myself with the people who helped me in the beginning, because I still have to go through this process of dealing with self. And self changes. It's hard to keep your mind focused on doing the right thing all the time. So I try to keep myself surrounded by the things that have energized me from day one and coming into this process. And as a result, you know, it's gotten easier. I lost my wife in 2005, and that was the most devastating thing that I've ever experienced. But I came around long enough just to hear people share about how they've got through some dramatic experience in their life, either the loss of their mother, the loss of a child, and not used behind it. You never know how you're going to respond to situations like that, and I really didn't know how to deal with my feelings and emotion. But I got so much support, like God sent these protected angels, these people in the fellowship who cared about me and how I responded to this dramatic and tragic situation. And as a result, I drew off of their strength, you know. So, you know, it's amazing how the God of our understanding, if we just open, have that open-mindedness to look more deep and get more honest with ourselves, will give us the help we need if we but only be honest about who we are and what we're trying to do. You know, this is a program for everyone, but, you know, there are some things that I've always been told that I got to do. No one can do it for me. This is one of the things I like about the third step. It says no one can make that decision for me, and we can't make it often enough. I've been fortunate and blessed to be around some of the greatest people in the world, because I deal with a lot of people. There's a whole lot of people that don't, I can't say they don't use drugs. There's a whole lot of people could use the information we have to make life a whole lot better for a whole lot of us. And I use this process in everything that I do, because the more in touch I stay with self and the relationship with my God and my understanding, it doesn't matter where I'm at, whether I'm in the rooms or out of the rooms, I can respond to things differently. And how I do that is through my humility. Humility for me has allowed me to be able to slow my thinking down long enough just to invite God in so I can make better choices, so I can feel when I'm about to make the wrong choice. You know, I try to watch what I say because I don't want to hurt or I don't want to offend anyone. But sometimes to represent where I am, some people are not going to like me. Some people are going to be indifferent. And I've learned to be all right with that, because just for today, I've gained a better perspective on my life. And I've gained a greater perception of understanding that it is better to understand than to be understood. I have some more serenity that way. I don't expect my kids to understand why I must move on with my life in other areas where they say, Dad, you don't need to do that, you know. And it's not been an easy road, but I do believe that this program works, and what keeps me in touch with things is coming to the conventions, staying in service, getting to know people and allowing people to get to know me. One of my, like my friend said, we met at the World Convention. Beautiful. Beautiful spirits, and they were in the fellowship. Never seen them before. Now we see them again. And it was a beautiful thing to be able to reach out and get to know people, because we all have something in common. We all are addicts, no matter where we're from, North Carolina, South Carolina, New York, New Jersey. Addiction is addiction. You know, this is the only thing you ain't got to worry about. You know, no discrimination. This disease do not discriminate. You know, so as a direct result of this program, I've been able to live a little bit more quality of life. I feel I have a lot more to offer as a grandfather. I feel I have a lot more to offer as a mentor. I do a lot of mentoring on my job to young people. And so this program has afforded me things in all areas of my life. So whenever I get an opportunity to give something back, that's what I do. Thank you. My name is Larry, and I'm at it. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you, man.
Really appreciate it. Oh, man. Appreciate it. Thank you. I'd like to thank Larry for leading the dynamite discussion on anonymity in the first and 12th tradition. For our next speaker is a young lady that she came all the way from Rochester, New York, and her home group is Recovery is Possible Group. And I'd like to introduce you to Tanya A.
I'm an addict. My name is Tanya.
Tanya.
Anonymity. Just kidding. Ooh. Thanks for sharing. I'm an addict, and my name is Tanya. And as Lou said, we come from the Recovery is Possible area, Rochester, New York. And we do this thing now going on.
Excuse me. Anybody find a pocketbook in here?
Okay. Hi, family. This is a we program. You know, the first tradition gave me permission to, like, take the me out of we. The first tradition tells us that, you know, that without the unity of this program, there ain't no program. Like, I was selfish most of my life. And I didn't know any better because of what I was taught, what I saw. When I came into this program, it was all about me, I thought, in a laid-back, subdued, manipulative kind of way, because I was the martyr. Most of the time, I like to play that role. And, you know, I don't want the focus to be about me today, because it's not about me, and it never has been about me. You know, in my everyday life, in my dealing with people, society at large, it's not about me, and this program gave me that. It gave me some freedom to not wanna or not have to carry that, I gotta do this by myself. Because I still live with that on a daily basis, I gotta do this by myself. Feeling like I gotta do this by myself, no matter what it is, at work, at play, with my children, with my significant other. And it's hard. The burdens are too heavy. And I forgot. And throughout the year, I forget that I don't have to do this alone. I'm a single mother raising 3 boys now at home. And, you know, the other one is out, but I forget that I'm not alone. This program is an awesome program. The program of Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. People that didn't know me hugged me. I'm talking about the unity that's the practical foundation of the program. Our literature tells us that the unity, the you and the I, that's a collective. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about carrying the message that an addict, any addict, can lose the desire to use. You know, I can't do that by myself. I didn't learn that by myself. We do this convention now. This is the 3rd year. And I gotta tell you, I was so done by Thursday evening, emotionally, physically, drained, like really ready to just say, I can't do it anymore. I don't wanna do it anymore because it's been such an overwhelming year in terms of me forgetting that I'm not alone. And that it's not just about me, because you see, the folks at work done pissed me off and they're working my ass more than a little bit. And I forgot that the God of my understanding, and through working the program, the steps and the traditions of Narcotics Anonymous, gave me the ability and the willingness to show up to do the kind of work that I do today that is very selfless. And I often forget when I got stuff going on at home with the kids, and I want to blame whoever that other individual was that was responsible to part of them as to why it is that I'm having such a hard time and why they're not there and why they're not doing this and that. You know, I often forget that, you know, as a direct result of the choices that I made, that's why I got what I got. But I have what I have today, and I'm grateful for it, because what I have, what I truly have, is a freedom and a peace in spite of my human, what's normal for me, responses to shit that I can't control. And that is fight or flee, right? I'm done. I'm tired. I don't want to do this. But you know what? I get phone calls from addicts out of the blue, may know me, may not know me, saying, I'm an addict. You know, I thought you needed a call. I've come to this convention, I've gotten numbers from individuals, I go to different meetings because it's not about me. It's about me, but it's not about me. Because without you, there would be no me. The first tradition gives me the ability to let it go, gives me permission to say, it's not about me. You know, when I recognize my clean time, it's not my clean time. It's our clean time, because without me, without you, I wouldn't have been able to do it. The acceptance and the surrender, the commitment to this program, the commitment to the people, to the predecessors that were here before me, because who the hell am I not to give it back? I thank each and every one of you that was here before me, that came after me, that believed enough in me. Our 12th tradition talks about anonymity being the spiritual foundation, reminding us to place principles before personalities. I have to place principles before personalities in my personal life, in my daily life at work, with my children, with my relationships, and it's not always easy, because me being the fixer, the people pleaser, I just want everything to be all right. And when it's not, it's about me. What didn't I do? What more can I do? And the reality is all I can do is show up. And I show up because y'all gave me the courage and the willingness. I got a phone call last night. It's real easy, and I don't know about anybody else, but I know for me, it's real easy for me to practice these principles in my affairs of attending meetings in Narcotics Anonymous. It's easy for me to practice these principles in my affairs in regards to working with sponsees. It's easy for me to practice these principles in my affairs of work, for the most part. But when it comes to practicing these principles in the affairs of my family, with my children, in my relationships with my significant other, where it really plays a part because they know me better than either one of you, they see me in the good and the bad and the ugly, and the even more ugly, I think they're ready for me to come more than I was ready to come. God has blessed me with some wonderful children. Circumstances may not have been the way that I wanted them to be, but they're here. And I have a 16-year-old son that I love, because he's a special child, and God intended for him to be with me. And I no longer question why. He's in a program headed towards one of his personal goals. And the group collectively was faced with having to deal with teenage use and what we should do. And you know, as much as I say, you know what I've gone through. You live my story with me. You lived my story. You know the consequences. You know this, you know that. And the other folks that are connected to us. My son made the decision to not use the chemical, but he chose not to say anything about the situation. And as a direct result, it's causing some issues in another area. And being a member of that committee, knowing what I know, knowing that, you know, what's important is the principle that's important in this situation is the fact that, you know, it's a counter drug program. And the principle is our children, and there's so many egos getting tied up in it because we have adults that don't know how to do what they need to do in the best interest of. And when I got this topic last week, I didn't know what I was going to do with it. I didn't know where I was going, and this situation came up. And my sponsee said, "Sponse, you talk about that all the time. I don't know that. What I know is I'm an addict. And in order for me to survive, to live, to grow in society at large, I need to do these simple things that y'all taught me how to do when I first got here. And when I don't know what to do, because I feel like I'm a, you know, I'm grown up a little bit. I'm a big girl today. Some days. But most oftentimes, I don't know what to do. And when I don't know what to do, I go back to the basics that this program taught me. When you don't know what to do, don't do anything. Call your sponsor, go to a meeting, you know. Because I don't know. It's not about me. It's about the unity. In order for me to stay sane, I need to practice the principles of the program because my principles got me here. I don't know what those principles were, but me, mine, and more. I think those were the ones that created the problem, that continue to create the problems for me in my everyday life when I don't apply the principles, you know, of surrender, the principles of acceptance, the principles of commitment, not just to the program, not just to me, you know, but to everything that's connected to me. Because without the unity of this program, I don't know where I would be. Without the unity of my support network, I don't know where I would be. I remember my sponsor telling me when I first got here, "Now, you know, anonymity, you need to practice anonymity." I'm like, "Yeah, okay." I was proud that this woman agreed to be my sponsor because I watched her and I learned from her and I wanted what she had and I was willing to do what y'all told me to do, and that was, you know, if you want these things, then do what we do. I did that. I watched her, and I wanted those things, and I said, you know, I'm an addict, and I was wondering, and I was scared, because I didn't know. What I knew was everybody always told me no, and fuck you, and so I began there, and I remember her telling me, you know, you want to be mindful. Because you really shouldn't tell anybody who your sponsor is. Me, I was proud. What? I was proud that this woman was my sponsor. And she said, you really, you know, you want to be careful because people don't always practice principles before personalities. You know, and we're a unique bunch of folks. And, you know, people tend to judge you by who your sponsor is. I was mad. I was hurt because how dare you tell me not to tell? Because y'all told me secrets keep me sick, and I was feeling good. I was proud, and I was like, I'm fire. I understand today what that means, and I tell my sponsees the same thing because, you see, I don't know what it is, what it's like in y'all area, but just I'm pretty sure the literature is the same. You know, and it talks about their being room for every manifestation of, you know, this disease and there being room for growth for everybody. You know, and I think we sometimes forget about that, and I know we do in our area, but because I've been able to free me to do what I need to do for me as a direct result of, you know, working and using the principles of the program in my life, there's certain people that don't agree with my lifestyle in our area. And as a direct result, those people that are in my life that are connected to me sometimes catch hell when people find out that they're connected to me. So that's how I learned why anonymity was so important, because like just like I wanted to fight when, you know, people said stuff to me or around me that I didn't like about my sponsor, my sponsees are the same today, and I tell them it's okay. I'm all right with me. Are you all right with me? If you are right with me and I'm all right with you, we can do this. Because it's not about me. You know? So I understand sometimes, and I guess, you know, I just want to put that out there. You know, people do judge you by the folks that you are connected with, and it's really sad, and I'm glad that just for today, I don't have to practice that behavior, because I know what it's like being on this side, you know, and I know my sponsees are just like, what you mean you don't want me to tell? But see, when they're calling me later on in the middle of the night and say, well, so-and-so said, and I'm mad, and, you know, they gave me the ultimatum, and, you know, it's like, it's all right. It's all right. What's important is that we don't pick up, that we get better just for today. You know, that we apply the steps and the traditions of the program. We keep the unity first in this program, because without you, without me, we don't have a program. Without the unity, no matter what you think, no matter how well you think I share or how well you or how you don't think I share, the principles of this program are that an addict, any addict, can lose the desire to use and find a new way to live. That is what's important. You know, it doesn't matter that you got what you got, because without the rest of us, how you gonna keep it? You may have gotten it, but how am I gonna keep it if I don't continue to place principle first? And that principle being, you know, I can't, we can. The principle being, you know, the spiritual foundation of this program is that it doesn't matter what color we are. It doesn't matter where we come from. It don't matter how much money we got, how much we don't have, what we did, how much we had. But what's important is what we want to do today and how we can help each other. You know, I feel like I'm bouncing here and there, and at this point I don't care, because guess what? It's almost over! And I can just sit back and enjoy the rest of this convention, but I got to tell you, I want to thank the program committee for believing in this addict that they did not know. They believed in the process of this program, the process that they collectively came up with. You know, 9 hours, 8 hours away. I've been here 3 years in a row now. You know, I get this call. Oh, this is so-and-so from the Chesapeake, Potomac area. First he said, how's the weather up there? It's cold. And it was. You know, and I'm like, and I had to be mindful because, you know, I was in a space. I'm like, didn't know the number because, you know, it was long distance. I'm like, All right, who's this? Because we are not chitting-chatting, and I don't know who the hell this is, right? So he said his name again, and I'm like, really? It's like, yeah, we were wondering if you are coming, you know, would you speak on? And immediately, disease told me, I ain't good enough. I ain't worthy. I was already feeling like crap because I was feeling like I wasn't worthy, like I wasn't good enough, like nothing that I did was good enough at my job that, you know, because that's where I was when I received the call. You know, and I got this parental stuff going on and I wasn't feeling good about that. And he said, we were wondering if you could share on this topic. Do you have a sponsor? Do you have a problem identifying as an addict only? Because I believe that that's critical. You know, I believe that we need to take the I out of this thing and get back to the we. I become very disturbed when I hear I in this program that we can't do alone. But he asked me the protocol questions, and I snickered. I'm like, okay, do I have a sponsor? Yes. Do they work the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous? And I giggled again. I was like, yeah. You know. Not, I guess, forgetting that people do that. You know, they get a little confused depending on the area and depending on what kind of, you know, facilities they have going on and whatnot. But I was just floored because I was so scared. I was so grateful because I had prayed for God to, like, help me out of where I was at. Because I was stuck and didn't know how to get out. Even with, you know, the 11 years clean, I didn't know how to get out. I didn't know how to stop, like, feeling sorry for myself again because I was so tired emotionally and physically. How, you know, just all I had to do was go and say, I'm tired, help me, and somebody would be there. How I forgot to, like, ask God to help me, just completely pushed him out. I was staying connected to people, but the lifeline, my spirit had become disconnected because I was so caught up in what they were doing to me and how they were pissing me off because they didn't appreciate me and because they're putting more shit on me. Well, they're doing it because they believe in me, and I forgot to believe in myself. First and foremost, I forgot that God had my back. And I had to drop to my knees and say, God, please forgive me. Thank you. Forgive me for easing you out. And he forgave me through a phone call from an addict from the Chesapeake Bay. Letting me know that he was still with me and that he still believed in me and that I was very willing, that I was worthy, that I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous and that wasn't a mistake. I'm not a mistake. It's not a mistake that I was asked to share on Tradition 1 and 12. It's funny because my sponsor said, don't you mention that topic name. Because if you're doing what you need to do, they'll know what it is. And I can't say for sure that I know that y'all know what it is, and I don't care. And I know that that sounds rude, but hey, I'm still me. Tanya A. from Rochester. But the bottom line is today I know how important anonymity is. because I don't want to have to fight y'all because I heard y'all talking about my sponsor. Or, you know, and I don't want to have to fight you because I feel like I have to defend me because of, you know, my affiliations. I don't want to have to walk around angry because you broke my anonymity. I don't have to walk around shamed today of the stigma. So if somebody does find out, it's like, yeah, and what? Because I'm not a using addict today, you know? No, I don't suggest that you go out and tell your next, you know, possible employer, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm a recovering addict, and February 25th, 1997, you know, I surrendered. So, you know, if a convention comes up and I'm scheduled to work, I ain't going to be there because I'll be at the convention because I'm an addict. That shit ain't going to work. Ain't going to work. And if you tell them and they're not open-minded, you might not get the damn job because they're going to think that your behaviors and your attitudes are going to get them. And more than likely they will if we're not practicing the principles of the program. Whew, I feel so much better. Now I can enjoy the rest of the convention and I can go get charged up and reconnected. Whew. And now I'm going to pass the torch, y'all, because I'm done. I'm an addict named Tanya. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, darling. I'd like to thank Tanya and Larry for leading this discussion on anonymity and on the tradition 1 and 12. We have a little time. We have a little more time, so they suggest that since we have some time, we're going to open the meeting up, and you guys could come up and you can share on your experiences with the with anonymity and the tradition 1 and 12. So the mic is open.
How you doing, group? My name is Freddie, and I'm an alcoholic and a dope fiend. Basically come out of AA, but started shooting dope in 60, and started drinking liquor in 1958. You know, when we talk about the traditions, as far as I'm concerned, I also was over St. Elizabeth at the John Howard. They gave up on me. But through the grace of God, it was people that, and she said it, seen more than me than I had in myself, because I suffer from a low self-esteem inferiority complex. This is what I came in here with. And I wouldn't be doing this. This is, you know what I mean? But N.A. and A.A., you know, because I'm both, and they both took me to the same place, so I don't have a problem, you know. But the traditions, what keeps us together, it teaches me how to act in a group, and she's right about we. Because it's always been I. If I didn't do it, it wouldn't get done. I, you know what I mean? Didn't have no, I don't know, faith, hope. And what the program have given me when we talk about the we part, because if you look at it, say, we admitted we was powerless. It didn't say I. And for the first time, I felt like I found a place where I fit. And what I'm really talking about, I'm talking about the first step and the tradition at the same time. And that's what it does. It gave me a place where I can come, where I raise my hand or not. I'm in a place where I got people just like me. And even if I talk gibberish, y'all understand that too. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for sharing. I'm an addict called Wes.
Hey, Wes.
And I'm just visiting from Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm the type of addict that sometimes I got to start at the end to get to the beginning. And that means I used to look for the dope even before I got high. So I'll start right there with the 12th tradition, anonymity being the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. So how does anonymity have a foundation in the first tradition? And how that does is one of the ways that we're united and tied together through anonymity is our ability to have our own literature. It unites us to have our own language, to be identified as an addict, just as a unifying thing. And that shows the process of anonymity. Anonymity means that I don't have to be anything you want me to be. All I have to do is show up. See, anonymity, we all know about Webster's definition that the state of bearing no names. But anonymity means that any addict can walk through those doors and is open for recovery. That's the unifying thing in the first tradition. Now, in the 12th tradition, it talks about principles before personalities. And how do I put my personality aside when I'm a human being trying to have a spiritual awakening? Very difficult for an addict like me. So what I did was I got with my sponsor and I tried to understand how do I practice this in all my affairs, right? And how do I show that I want to be part of this fellowship, and how do I keep the unity together? I think the most important thing that I can do is know, and my sponsor explained it to me real simply. He said, the most unifying and the most anonymous thing that I can practice is that we all don't have to be well together. See, we don't all have to be well at the same time, because if everybody in here was cured, we'd all be in trouble. And I found out in North Carolina there's only two things that get cured. That's tobacco and ham. You know, addicts just don't get cured. So it's real simple that by me just showing up, and he made it real simple, how do I practice anonymity in the 12th tradition? He said, when you feel good, a meeting needs you. When you feel bad, you need a meeting. Thanks for letting me share.
Would anybody else like to share?
I'm an addict. My name is Gary.
Hey, Gary.
It's a good day to be clean, man. It's a good day to be in the meeting. And, you know, I was just sitting there thinking about my first convention. And this girl walked up to me, and she gave me this little button. And the button said, be the wheat. And, you know, at the time, I really didn't understand it. And I was like, that's cute. You know, it rhymes, you know. But after getting into service, I began to understand, because, you know, I went into service with what I thought were real great ideas, and I felt like, you know, they should adapt my great ideas, you know, but I quickly learned that that it wasn't about me. I heard somebody say it, that it was about being the we. And anonymity for me, and practicing it, was kind of like I needed to get real small, to not disappear, you know, to not shy away from conflict, to not bring my ideas, my opinion, you know, to the group. I should continue to do that. But I should also be a part of the process. That, you know, acceptance was a big part of being able to practice anonymity for me. Being able to accept, you know, for example, the group conscience, you know, whatever came up in the group conscience, you know, the decision-making process, being able to accept whatever happened. So anonymity for me meant to just kind of get small in here. You know, and be a part of the we instead of a part of me. You know, it was not about me, and I learned that by getting into service. And you know, there was some conflict and some a lot of pushback, I guess you could say. So that's my take on it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Would anybody else like to share? If not, we can close the meeting by saying serenity prayer from our seats. God,